Welcome to the Island Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I have former Seattle Supersonic, current Oklahoma City Thunder superstar, Royce Young, on the line. Royce, how's it going?
It's going good. I guess, yeah, technically I am a former Sonic because of the shared history thing.
Yeah, you got, you like, I mean, your blog is somewhere in the record books of the Sonics organization for now, but the Maloofs are apparently selling, and not in a way that a lot of people outside of Seattle wanted.
Yeah. Yeah, that's that was pretty surprising, which is really weird because rumors of that started last night when some agent's daughter tweeted it.
Right.
Which is really strange, which she scooped everyone somehow, and then it, I guess, I don't know, I guess it's been the type of thing with this whole, are the Kings, you know, what are they doing and what are they not doing? I mean, it seemed like a sure deal that they were moving to Anaheim last year, and that didn't happen. So it's one of those things that, you know, it's not like I'm not trusting what some people are reporting, but it's, I feel like it needs to be done for me to really believe it's done.
Yeah, I mean, especially when the Maloofs are involved, I think that's definitely definitely the way to go. Yeah, I guess, I don't know, I've had information about the whole Anaheim thing for a while that I guess is kind of widely known, but I didn't want to get people in, certain people in trouble, but I feel like that, you know,
it's, you have to break news here?
I don't know that it's breaking news. I think it's been hinted at before, but I mean, essentially the Maloofs were told they, in so many words, that they weren't allowed to move to Anaheim.
Right.
By the NBA. Like, the NBA said, no, we're going to give them a shot.
There.
And it was kind of spun a different way.
Right.
But that was essentially, we don't trust you guys to have the best situation here, so, or to have the best decision here, so we're just going to put this on hold for a while. And, which, you know, considering their history, they've lost quite a bit of money over the years.
Right. Haven't exactly run a model franchise the past 10.
Definitely not at all. I mean, that there is a lot of dysfunction within that franchise, even just with the DeMarcus Cousins stuff. I mean, I can see why the Maloofs didn't want to trade him. I'm sure that's a key asset in the $500 million acquisition.
Right. Yeah.
Here's the thing. Like, I didn't feel happy when the Sonics moved to Oklahoma City. I didn't feel happy for Oklahoma City because it was a crappy situation, but it wasn't that I was mad at Oklahoma City. It was just a very neutral feeling. It was just like, okay, this is happening. I'm not happy for you, but I know you guys will be a good fan base because prove that to some extent when you were sharing the Hornets.
Right.
And I feel the same way about Seattle. Like, I don't feel good about their, I understand why they're happy. I don't feel good about it. I don't feel good about the team moving to that city. I know 3 years from now, the fan base is going to be great. The new arena will be great. This ownership group is going to be 100 times better than what the Maloofs are capable of doing, even at their peak. You know, this is going to be a good basketball situation. It's just, it's hard to feel anything positive about the fans lucking out in this situation. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, because it's, you know, we're all talking about what's happened here, but you know, it is a little bit overlooked that a great fan base. I mean, the Kings were the original Thunder, basically.
Yeah.
How excited they were at Arco Arena and those great playoff series with the Lakers. I mean, so it's almost as if we're overlooking the fact that, you know, a great NBA city and a great fan base is going to have their team taken away from them. And, you know, from my perspective, since I do kind of have the unique perspective of being in a city that didn't have an NBA team and then had to go through the Seattle move, I was always on record that I hated the way Oklahoma City got an NBA franchise. I mean, I love the fact that professional sports came to my city and my state. I mean, I would never apologize for it. I don't regret that it happened, but I mean, I sorely wished it could have been under better circumstances.
Absolutely.
Because it was ugly, and it, you know, Seattle is a great NBA city with a lot of history. Gary Payton and Sean Kemp and downtown Freddie Brown and all that stuff, Detlef Schrempf and all those great players. For them to basically be just kind of washed away in history because the team moved to Oklahoma City was really upsetting. Because I mean, I was any kid. I remember the NBA Finals with the Sonics playing the Bulls and all that stuff. So it was really kind of distressing, but, you know, again, Oklahoma City got a franchise, which outweighed my sadness. So,
yeah.
It's obviously worked out great for me. I mean, I wouldn't have a job doing what I'm doing without the NBA.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, you know, Clay Bennett essentially it seems like he lied to everybody when he bought the team, and I guess it doesn't really matter because it's not like he took them to a city where, I mean, he didn't leave Seattle. There's no way he could have, but like Seattle wasn't left in this state of never being able to get a team again. I mean, it was pretty obvious that if they got a new arena, they'd get a team, and Clay Bennett didn't take it to a bad place for sports. Like, I mean, the Thunder, arguably the best home court in the league, right? And one of the, yeah. I mean, one of the most passionate fan bases, if not, you know, arguably the most passionate fan base. It's just such a weird situation. I mean,
yeah, it made sense. It made so much sense for Oklahoma City to have a team, especially after they kind of proved their worth.
Definitely.
With the whole Hornets thing. And it was just, you know, when Clay Bennett bought the Sonics franchise, there was nobody in Oklahoma that was so naive to believe that he was genuinely going to try to keep the team there. I mean, everybody in Oklahoma City knew that Clay Bennett went up there, bought that team because he wanted to move them to Oklahoma City. Because he tried to buy the Hornets from George Shinn, but George Shinn wouldn't sell them to him.
Yeah.
And he wanted to keep the Hornets in Oklahoma City. So, you know, that was always the goal, and nobody in Oklahoma City tried to pretend that it was any different. Now, I will say that the one thing that Bennett did do, I mean, if you watch his introductory press conference, he did tell him point blank that if you don't build a new arena, we'll explore our relocation options.
Yeah.
Which, you know, whether or not he was really putting on the good faith of actually trying to make that effort and front enough money. I mean, the arena that he proposed was just an insane amount of money, so it was as if they would never build it. So, I mean, like I said, all in all, I think the intentions were pretty clear of what Clay Bennett wanted to do. Now, a lot of people like to use the word steal. Did he go steal the team? My perspective is that you can't really steal something that you own. I mean, whether or not it was slimy, whether or not it was a little bit underhanded, yeah, I mean, I could see that point. But, I mean, Bennett didn't steal the Sonics. He just went and bought a business and moved them to another city, which, you know, sports we're attached to because of our emotions and we get connected to teams. You know, if this was AT&T or Apple or something like that and he went and bought it and moved it to his city, we wouldn't really care.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, saying he stole the team is a horribly, like, mischaracterization of the situation. I mean, he technically gave them a chance. Technically gave them a chance, I think, knowing that, you know, they had just financed the baseball stadium, they just financed the football stadium. I mean, and
so ripe for that with Safeco Field and Quest Field.
Yeah, like it was gonna be just hard.
Arena.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I don't know, maybe he proposed, you know, helicopter valet for every single fan and teleportation devices. Maybe that drove up the cost. I don't really know what the plans were.
Right.
But technically they had a chance, knowing that in that economic environment with what the city had just committed, it was highly unlikely something was going to get done. On the Kings side of it, they had an arena deal. I mean, the Maloose agreed to one. They celebrated it at half court.
I just Googled that picture and laughed at it.
Yeah, I believe it was February 28th of 2012. And they claimed
that?
What's that?
Were you still in Sacramento?
No, I was not. I was not there for that.
Shame you missed out on that.
Yeah, I know. Oh, my God. It would be fun to talk to them about that now, because they claimed when they eventually said that the arena deal was unfair that the only reason they did that celebration is because they didn't want to embarrass Kevin Johnson. But for half of that celebration, Kevin Johnson isn't even on the court. Like, they're playing "There Goes My Hero" and, like, just preening to the crowd and throwing their hands in the air and running their hand across Sacramento on the chest and stuff. I mean, it was just it's like, looking back, it's such an embarrassing and a total Maloof thing to do.
It's just weird.
I just
Googled that picture. I saw somebody tweeted the video of it.
Yeah.
I feel like that needs to go to Springfield for the Hall of Fame for great moments and horrible NBA failures right there.
You had some interesting tidbits on Daily Thunder just now about kind of some additional, I guess, parts of the original agreement to move the Thunder. Wait, can you go into those a little bit?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is that, you know, this, it seems, you know, just kind of by exponentially, I mean, this does affect the Thunder quite a bit, because, you know, if Seattle gets a team, then what happened, you know, who owns what in terms of the 1979 championship and retired jerseys and all that stuff. And in the settlement that they had in 2008 what the Thunder did is that they basically settled on a shared history with the city of Seattle. So records and championships can be used by the Thunder, but they can also be used by Seattle once a new team goes there. Now, how that really works out, I don't know how that they would do that, because my perspective in Oklahoma City is, especially here, the Thunder really don't trot around a lot of the history. You know, you'll see stuff on TV like Kevin Durant had the most points in a quarter since Gary Payton, which is kind of awkward to see. But other than that stuff, you don't see like a championship banner from 1979. You don't see trophies. So
yeah,
I would kind of assume that the Thunder would just kind of push all that stuff to Seattle and just kind of let it be.
Aside from like in-game scoring marks, have you seen any of the history used in advertisements or marketing or anything?
No, never. And that doesn't surprise me, because the move was so bitter, and it was, you know, the Oklahoma City ownership group is still kind of sore from how that all went down. So
in the first game of last year's finals in Oklahoma City, it would have been pretty awkward for Clay Bennett to walk out there holding the 79 trophy and be like, hey, let's get this guy a brother.
Right, exactly. But I mean, the other thing a lot of people are asking is that Clay Bennett actually owns the Supersonics logo and name.
Yeah.
But in the settlement, they agreed that if a team moved back to Seattle, Bennett would turn the logo and name over to a new owner, and it wouldn't. And the new owner wouldn't have to pay for it, of course, with approval from the league. So the Kings, if they wanted to be the Seattle Supersonics again, they could be, because Bennett owns that, but he would turn it over according to the settlement.
I'm curious why he would even take that to begin with if they knew they were going to change the team name. Is it simply so people couldn't assume it and then make money off of it? I guess I don't really understand the business side of that.
I bet that's probably what it was. I bet it was like so people couldn't just start, you know, printing old Supersonics t-shirts and stuff. I bet it was so that he could just, you know, basically have complete control over all the branding and logos and stuff like that. Because, I mean, they weren't going to name the team Supersonics here in Oklahoma. I mean, that was never going to happen. But I would assume that it was probably just a financial thing that they were just trying to kind of cover their bases or something.
And you did mention in the Daily Thunder piece that Kevin Durant is still going to remain in Oklahoma City.
That was not part of the settlement, thankfully, is that Kevin Durant does not have to return to Seattle where he was drafted. He gets to remain in Oklahoma City, which I'm very thankful for.
I know that he's on Boston now, but does Jeff Green have to go back? I mean, was that part of
the... I don't care. And they can also take Kendrick Perkins. Maybe Robert Swift will go back, and some of those guys.
Yeah, maybe like Sayer Sene and Johan Petro. Let's get the band back together.
Whoever else. This is the joke that I've been trying to make, and I couldn't figure out how to make it. But if the city of Seattle really wanted to get revenge on Oklahoma City, the first thing that they would do is make Sam Presti just an ungodly offer for Nick Collison and take him. Because that really pissed people off here.
I think that's a good idea. Really, just really ramp up that rivalry. That's actually a fascinating point. This becomes...
It's a huge rivalry.
A huge rivalry now.
Can you imagine the first game, like, that the Thunder go back to Key Arena or wherever they're playing? I mean, that's going to be... I feel like that's going to be a little violent.
Yeah, it's so weird. Like, I mean, not in the same way, but it's similar in the way that all of a sudden the Heat and the Cavs kind of became a rivalry for one side of it, you know? Like, the Cavs fans just wanted them to destroy the Heat. And not that the Kings players will feel that, but in a way, they might have to assume that kind of mentality just because the fans will be so passionate about it.
Yeah. I'm not real up to snuff on NFL stuff, but, you know, I remember when the Browns moved to Baltimore, that was pretty contentious. And I guess I don't remember... Seems like they're pretty much over that now when the Browns go to Baltimore to play, but I would imagine that was pretty ugly the first time that they went back too.
Before Trent Richardson joined the Browns this year, the only two memories of the Cleveland Browns I really have are Braylon Edwards dropping passes, and then there was that big fat guy that sat in the dog pound with the dog mask on. Really,
those are great memories.
Yeah, and then, you know, like 50 years earlier, there was Jim Brown. Like that's really all I remember about the Cleveland Browns.
Tim Couch was a draft pick of theirs, and that's just something.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Moving forward, does this finally put, like, at least, I mean, I'm sure you still hear things from time to time about how much people hate Oklahoma City for taking the Sonics. Do you think that this puts it to rest finally and you guys can just be your own franchise?
Yeah, I mean, maybe, and I hope so. I think for the most part, you know, it was kind of, you mentioned the finals last year, and that was really weird to me, is because for the most part everybody had moved past kind of slandering Oklahoma City about the whole Seattle move. And then out of nowhere, columnists and stuff saw it as a good hook and a good angle to start writing about how that finals could have been in Seattle and how wonderful that would have been, and what a shame it is the Seattle. So it's like it all came up again, and so, you know, that's kind of, I think, where we are again, and it'll be that way when the team actually moves there. You know, there's obviously a connection, and there's going to always be a connection between Oklahoma City and Seattle, but, you know, hopefully it does kind of close the chapter on it, because, you know, the Thunder are a great organization. It's a great franchise. Oklahoma City loves this team. I think it's worked out for the best the way it's happened. But Seattle's always deserved a team. And they're going to be a great NBA city again. And I think – and you know, like I said at the very beginning of this, what the shame of it is that we're acting like Sacramento doesn't deserve one either. But that's just the way this stupid business works, is the teams can be relocated. And, you know, somebody pays an ungodly amount of money, which reportedly $500 million, seems like a whole lot to buy the Kings. The Maloofs were willing to sell it, and so the new owners can do what they want. So
I think.
But like I said, I mean, I hopefully it just kind of moves everything forward from the whole Seattle, Oklahoma City stuff, and that people can kind of just get past it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, I mean, the frustrating part of it all is how much Sacramento is getting screwed here, because they were given a year, not even a year, they're essentially given like 10 months to pull together public funding, get the legislature. I mean, as someone who is from Sacramento, let me tell you, to get that city government moving in any kind of direction is nearly impossible. And yet they all found a way to get together, find an arena deal in which the Maloofs had to put up only really the money they owed the city in debt. And that I believe the NBA paid at one point, so maybe they just owe the NBA now.
There needs to be a great book written.
Oh yeah, I mean there is a really good documentary out by James Hamm of Cowbell Kingdom.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
Small Market, Big Heart. That is really fantastic. And
but now that this is all, I feel like now that this has all kind of come together, it just needs to be like, because at that time even James probably didn't feel like he could go all completely out because the team hadn't actually moved yet.
Definitely. And so, I mean, I'm sure he had relationships he still had to foster to be able to cover that team. And that's the thing. Like there was an arena deal with all the necessary money and sponsorship and just a minimal amount of commitment from a monetary standpoint from the Maloofs that they already owed. And there were ownership groups, you know, local ownership groups that were willing to buy the team. I don't know if $500 million would have happened, but, I mean, some absurdly wealthy people looking to help save the Kings. And the fact that it's not being sold, I mean, I'm sure the dollar amount is a huge amount. That you don't pass up $500 million for a basically defunct franchise.
They overpaid Howard Schultz for the Sonics.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I feel like that's just kind of our capitalism system, you know, there that you can overpay for something just because you have the money to get it and then do what you want with it. So
yeah, definitely. And I mean, you're moving the team to, I believe Seattle is like the ninth biggest market in the U.S. I mean, that's it. You're going to make that money back pretty easily.
And that's, you know, and I think that that's always kind of been what's lost in this, is that, you know, Bennett was definitely serious about that Key Arena was not a viable NBA arena. It really wasn't.
Yeah.
It just wasn't set up for, in the modern NBA, to make money with the luxury suites and concessions and all that type of stuff. So if they get this brand new shiny arena, I have no doubt that Seattle will thrive. But, you know, I almost – Clay Bennett's intentions were slimy or whatever you want to call them or not. You know, I think he did have a very strong point that, you know, you need to build a new arena because if it wasn't Clay Bennett, somebody, you know, Howard Schultz had been trying to sell the team for 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
And somebody else would have bought that team. You know, he would have kept the team in Seattle. He would have kept owning them in Seattle if they were making money and doing good things and building him a new arena. So.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think it was like 90s night at Key Arena for like a Sonics Kings game, ironically enough, in like, I don't know, maybe 2004 or 2005. I can't quite remember, but I went because I was in Seattle at the time. That just happened to be the game while I was there. Key Arena is an awful arena. I mean, you know, even back then, like it was a horrible arena. And looking at Arco Arena or Power Balance Pavilion or Sleep Train Amphitheater or, you know, whatever the hell they're calling it now. I mean, it's the worst. I mean, that is what the Kings are playing in now is the worst arena in the league. I mean, it is a relic. It is completely outdated. It is horribly, I would say, horribly maintained. And part of that is, hey, let's make it, you know, we don't need to spend money on it because we're trying to get a new home. So right. Why waste the money? But there is a valid point to an NBA team probably could not thrive for very long in a place like Key Arena, much like they can't do with the current Sacramento Arena.
Yeah. It's just, boy.
It just sucks for Sacramento fans. And that's the thing. If they hadn't done what they needed to do to get the deal that was agreed to, then I would just kind of say, hey, this is on you guys. But they've literally done everything asked of them.
Yeah, that is a key distinction. And not that, I mean, me being an Oklahoma City person, I mean, anybody from Seattle obviously can understand my bias. And,
right.
But that is a key distinction between the Seattle-Oklahoma City thing and the Seattle-Sacramento thing, is that Sacramento really made their effort. They put in a great effort to do it. Seattle, on the other hand, you know, they had city council votes. They had popular votes. They had all types of different things to try to get a new arena approved, and nobody in the city would do it.
Yeah.
So, I think that there is a difference there in the Sonics move to Oklahoma City, that the Sacramento Kings fans and the people of Sacramento did everything that they could possibly do to keep the team there. It just came down to poor ownership, poor direction,
yeah.
and their choice. So.
And that's the thing. It's not saying that Seattle fans didn't fight for their team as hard as Sacramento fans did. It's just that the financial constraints on the city of Seattle at the time didn't allow it. It was, you know, like we said earlier, it's probably a very well calculated move by Clay Bennett.
Right. And you know, and that's something that always really frustrated me. Especially that Oklahoma City people would try to say, and they still say, is that, you know, look how many fans you had in the arena in Seattle. No wonder they moved. I mean, if you wanted them to stay, you should have went to the arena, which is just totally a bogus argument.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that team had been in Seattle for 41 years. Let's fast forward and picture an Oklahoma City franchise 41 years from now that's in the lottery and is terrible. I don't foresee it being sold out here. And that's by no means an indication for a team that needs to move. So, I mean, it really has nothing to do with necessarily the fan support.
Exactly.
It had a whole lot more to do with just the local government and the financial situation.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know what the exact numbers are now, but a few years ago it was there were, you know, talks about, well, the Kings don't draw attendance now anyway. It's like, well, I believe at the time it was like 22 of their 27 seasons, first 27 seasons or something like that, they had sold out. And let [S2] Right. [S1] Me tell you, as someone who grew up in Sacramento, those were not teams to sell out for. Like, that was a horrible, horrible franchise that had maybe a glimmer of hope with Mitch Richmond, and not until they got the Vlade, Weber, Jay Will, Bibby, you know, combinations going in those years did they ever actually have a team worthy of really like paying premium money to go see.
Yeah. I mean, and that's why, you know, I talked to somebody in the front and the Thunder business president, business office type, you know, bigwig person, and he said that they've kept a very close eye on the whole Kings situation because they were what the Thunder were.
Yeah.
Or right now. And so, you know, what went wrong with them? What changed to go from having an incredible fan support and an incredible fan base where everybody was extremely excited about it? And like I told them on the phone, I was like, they quit winning, dude.
Right.
They quit winning and their ownership got bad and all that stuff. But, you know, I continue to try to wonder what's going to – I mean, Oklahoma City's got a great reputation for having an incredible fan base right now. But when Kevin Durant retires and this team gets bad and they're in the lottery for 3 or 4 straight years, what's it going to look like then? I mean, are they going to remain like the Golden State Warriors have and keep, you know, keep packing the house and keep people excited even despite, you know, terrible moves and a bad team? Or will they go the way of, you know, the Detroit Pistons or the, you know, Atlanta Hawks or whoever that
right.
you know, didn't fill up their arena when their team was bad?
Hey, what are the chances Kevin Durant retires before tonight so the Timberwolves have a chance to win this game?
Pretty high. Sources are telling me he's pretty upset about being ejected
because he's not nice anymore. So why even keep playing?
He's embarrassed and he's just gonna hang it up. He's like Barry Sanders. He wants to finish before his time. You know.
How are you enjoying this this new persona of Kevin Durant? Because I mean I like it in the sense that I've probably watched too many action movies in my life where I just like it when the good guy kind of turns bad a little bit. And I don't even know that he's turning bad. I think he's just growing up and evolving, and and maybe realizing that he doesn't have to be the humble, lovable guy all the time. Like he can let out a little bit.
Yeah, I think he feels that he has a little longer leash than he used to have. You know, and yeah. So you know, off the court, KD still is, you know, humble and nice and perfect a person as he ever was. But you know, on the court, he's always kind of had a little bit of a mean streak. You know, it's not like he was an angel on the floor where he never back talked or never got, you know, anything. But you know, he's kind of opened it up. There was the game against the Hawks earlier this year where he had an and-one dunk on Josh Smith or somebody, and he let out a very clear, "This is my effing house," right there on TV. And it was like, you know, I'm sure he said that type of stuff in the past, or he may have, but now it feels like I really notice it, because it's like, oh, KD, you know, the whole marketing campaign, and then plus, you know, he's such a visible person now, going to the finals and being an MVP candidate and everything like that. So the ejection, though, that definitely caught me off guard, because it's not like Durant to lose his cool like that. But
I guess, if anything, you would start wondering if there was like a Freaky Friday between him and Russell Westbrook, where the two like just switch personalities.
That's unbelievable, because Russell's never been ejected. Kevin Durant has.
That was the fascinating part about that, is like, all right, yeah, Durant was his first ejection. Now he's caught up with Westbrook. Oh wait, Westbrook's never been ejected.
Westbrook's gotten some technicals, you know, over time, but it seems like Russ, he's always just kind of been able to control it. And you know, like I said, KD's gotten, you know, he had 5 technicals last year. I think he's got 6 this season already. So it's not like he's, you know, immune to getting a technical foul.
Right.
It's just that they were pretty, you know, spaced out and pretty rare for him to get. And they're becoming a little bit more common. It seems like maybe Durant feels a little sense of entitlement now, since he is a superstar, since he is a 3-time scoring champ into the finals. And when he doesn't get some of those calls, he's like, hey, I'm Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
You're not giving me a call? So maybe there's something that's changed in that.
It's clearly just the workouts with LeBron are infecting his brain, right?
Right, yeah. KD blamed it on you know, Kendrick Perkins being on his team.
That's right.
That his bad attitude is rubbed off on him. So
maybe
the first thing that Perkins messed up.
I posed this question on Twitter. Is it Durant or Westbrook who gets sucked into the Brea flop tonight? Which one?
Oh boy! Did you see that KD said at shoot around this morning?
I'm pulling video to do an analyzation of the Barea foul, because I think oftentimes it is actually a foul. Like, yeah. I would say, like, maybe more often than not, like maybe 60% of the time it's a legitimate foul, and the rest of the time he's faking it. But I've talked to Barea about it before, and he's like, no, I just get in there and try to get it, you know, take away their space. And if they foul me, you know, it's a foul. Like, he's really trying to justify it. Right. I'm just like, really? Because you kind of flop back a little bit.
Well, and that's the thing, is that, and I'll admit it right here, that I think I was wrong in the first game, where I thought Barea flopped on Durant. And part of the reason that I was so frustrated with that is, as soon as Durant got the ball and he had Barea on him, I was like yelling at my TV. I was like, he's going to flop. He's gonna do. That's like his – he's like a, you know, like an animal in the desert or something that has like this defense mechanism.
Right.
Predators near that, like, he's going to flop. That's just what he does. And as soon as he did it, and as soon as I saw his head fly back, I was like, he did it. I can't believe it. And so, like, I just assumed that it was a flop. And then I started watching the replay, and my face was red, because – Durant definitely created contact there.
Yeah, that's – I mean, it is because of his height that he – once you get your forearm up, it's basically in his face. I mean, there are very few players that put their forearm up to protect, and it's right. Not like right at his throat or right at his face. And it's just a product of the disparity in height, and he knows how to use it to his advantage.
Yeah. I mean, and you know – the other thing, Durant, you know, he called him a flopper, but he was kind of saying it in jest, and then he went on to talk about, you know, how Barea's turned into a dominant NBA scorer even at his size, and he's a smart guy. He understands that, not just that he's short and that he has to, you know, do other things better, but he's figured out almost a way to use his short stature to an advantage in a weird way, which is really impressive when you think about it.
Yeah, one thing that, I mean, not that I have to tell you what to watch for, but, it, you know, in the arena tonight, I would say that just – it's fun to keep an eye on how he creates space with his body when he has the ball, yeah. Because it is a very different thing than you're used to seeing. I mean, you're used to seeing, you know, 6'1", 6'2", 6'3", guards creating space against big guys. But to see someone who's, you know, about 5'9", doing it, like, yeah. I feel like I've got, like, about 3 inches on Barea when I'm talking to him, and I'm not that tall. I'm like barely 6 feet tall. So like, to imagine myself doing that against the, you know, with – you know, three fewer. He's in a little bit better shape than me, I'd say.
Yeah, well, you know, there was you know, earlier in the game this year against the Timberwolves and then against the Mavericks, it amazes me every time when I see Serge Ibaka rotating over, or you know, he's kind of trailing behind Brea, and Brea's about to go up for a layup. I'm like, oh, of course this is going to get swatted into oblivion, and then Brea gets it like up on the glass somehow.
Like, yeah, he's really good at like getting it. Yeah, he gets it quick to the glass without it being out of control, which is
which
it's fun when he's doing that. It's not so fun when he's taking step back jumpers against a six nine guy.
Except against the Thunder, where he swishes them every time.
Right. Yeah. That was
48 feet. And he's going to make it.
That was a bit of an outlier because he really torched them.
I would say so too, but he did it in the Western Finals and he just completely broke Oklahoma City's back when he was in Dallas. So it's, I'm expecting 48 points from JJ Green.
So what do you think? What do you think happens? Wolves are on a back to back. It's the first back to back Ricky Rubio will play. He looked great last night. It's hard to imagine he's going to be able to keep that up tonight. One, against Westbrook, even though he's played him well in the past. And two, just his conditioning. He didn't get to work out for a week because of the back spasms. He's felt sluggish. But what do you think that the Thunder can do against a starless Minnesota Timberwolves team?
Well, you would think that Thunder would come out and roll them, but the last time the Thunder played, they played against a more than starless Wizards team who are, first of all, terrible, and then they were also missing Nene and Jordan Crawford, who are their two best healthy players currently.
Right.
So, and the Thunder lost to them. So, all bets are off in my mind. I honestly feel like the Timberwolves are probably in better shape playing no stars than they are playing with their stars, because the Thunder seem to struggle. But, you know, with the way that Wizards game went, and as bad as Oklahoma City played, with them being at home, I mean, surely you would think that they would come out with a little bit of an edge and a little bit of anger, and to try to kind of make that loss against the Wizards right again. And like you said, I mean, the Timberwolves are beat up. I think what's going to be most interesting is, you know, Pekovic just absolutely murdered the Thunder in the first meeting.
Yeah.
And, you know, what adjustments do the Thunder make to that? And like you said, Rubio played in the first meeting, but he didn't have a huge impact in that game. I think his minutes were probably still moderately limited at that time.
Yeah.
And, you know, with him running the pick and roll with Pekovic, I feel like they're going to be even more deadly than they were before. So that's going to be – they may not have Kevin Love, but I feel like Pekovic is enough to be afraid of.
Yeah,
and on basketball.
Definitely. But before I let you go, I will let you know to look out for Peck's new tattoo that's on his left forearm. It is a giant grizzly bear.
I saw your tweet about that.
And he explained it last night of, why did you get a grizzly bear? And he said, well, bears are big and powerful, and everyone's afraid of a bear. That was his reason, which I found fantastic.
Great reason.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic.
I also think that Peck is one of the only players that probably Perk is like, for real, like, okay, I'm not going to mess with him.
Right.
I'm not going to try to get after him. I'll just let him go tonight.
Yeah, the Wolves don't get into scuffles often, but you see guys immediately go over to Pekovic to make sure he's in a good mood when it happens.
Oh, man.
So to wrap it up, the Maloofs suck. The Sonics will live again, and it's Pekovic against Durant tonight.
Yeah, and we can already – can we start previewing the Thunder-Sonics playoff series that's going to happen in 2018? Because I feel like that's going to be really fun.
Yeah, I feel like – yeah, maybe we should get a preview going on it. That's a good idea.
That'll be fun.
All right, Royce Young, thank you so much.
No problem.